morning and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 54th episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you're tuning in for the first time, Fiber Hooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else I think is interesting. I want to make sure that I thank the good folks at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeCrochet.com, your source for great crochet patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to AllFreeCrochet.com to get in on the fun. While we're on the subject, I want to welcome the new listeners from AllFreeKnitting.com and AllFreeCrochet.com. I'm thrilled to be here with you today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Thank you for making the move with us to our new home and new format. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. We do have another sponsor for today's show. Our show today is also brought to you by Bijou Basin Ranch. Bijou Basin Ranch has 27 gorgeous new colors in its two most popular yarn blends, Himalayan Trail, a blend of yak and merino, and Lasha Wilderness, which is a blend of yak and bamboo. These colors were inspired by the Outlander series of books and are appropriately called Outlandish Colors. You can jump online at bijoubasinranch.com to see them all. That's B-I-J-O-U. BasinRanch.com. Okay, my guest today is a nationally recognized knit and crochet designer, teacher, and author. She grew up in Georgia, but has spent most of her adult life in the beautiful Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. She learned to knit and crochet from her grandmother, who lived with the family, and to sew and needlepoint from her mother. While she always had some kind of craft going as a child and teen, it wasn't until she was a young adult that knitting became a passion. One of the first sweaters she made was a complex fingering weight shawl-collared vest made with a combination of Fair Isle and Intarsia. In retrospect, it probably wasn't the best choice for a beginner, but she didn't know any better than to try to attempt it. She serves as a technical editor for yarn companies and independent publishers, and writes columns for both Creative Knitting and Crochet magazines. Her designs have appeared in Knitters Magazine, Interweave Crochet, Creative Knitting, Knit and Style, and many other publications. She has taught at Stitches Events, the National Needle Arts Association, the Knit and Crochet Show, Midwest Fiber and Folk Art Fair, New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, otherwise known as Rhinebeck, Fall Fiber Festival in Montpelier, and other national venues. She considers herself fully bitextural and likes to serve as a knit-crochet diplomat, easing the schism that can exist between the two disciplines. She is one of the smartest and hardest working people in the fiber arts world. She's also very sweet, with a very thoughtful outlook on the world. I'm speaking of my friend, the very talented and versatile Edie Ekman. Edie joins us today from Waynesboro, Virginia. Good morning, Edie, and welcome to the show.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here.
It's great to have you with us, Edie.
I'm excited about whatever it is we're going to be talking about.
Well, we're going to be talking about you, and we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. First, I should ask, so how are things this morning in Waynesboro?
Well, it's finally warm and spring, whatever, and maybe the pollen's almost gone. We'll see. You may hear me sneeze now and then because the flowers are out and the pollen is upon us.
I have the same problems, but I try to get beyond that by just simply not going outside.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
Oh, you have no idea. I am one of those people that will go down into my basement office and not see the light of day, if possible, for days on end. It's terrible.
Well, I've lived with people like that, so I can understand that.
Well, again, it's great to have you on the show. You've been on the short list for a long time, and I am really excited to be able to kind of share you with the Fiber Hooligan audience today. Let's get right into the interview today. I'm going to start with my normal question. So, Edie Ekman, who are you and where did you come from?
Well, I consider myself a knit and crochet author, teacher, designer, technical editor. I do a little bit of everything. I grew up in Georgia, sort of crafting and doing things. I had a crafty grandmother who lived with us, who was a big influence on me, and now I just am sort of immersed in the fiber arts world doing this and that.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the this and that. Let's back up real quickly and talk a little bit about it. So Grandma, she's the one that taught you all the crafty stuff.
I was so lucky to have a grandmother who was in-house. So you know how grandmothers are. They can do all the fun stuff, and they don't have to do any of the discipline stuff. So while my mother sewed and did needlepoint, I don't remember her having as much time for me as my grandmother did. So I learned to knit and crochet and sew and embroider from my grandmother. And my dolls had the best custom-made wardrobe of any dolls in the neighborhood. They had, you know, twin sets and matching skirts and so on, all handmade by Nana. So that was a great influence on me. And she taught me to knit and taught me to crochet.
Well, that's pretty cool. It's wonderful that you had that experience when you were young, and I hope it was a pleasant experience. I hope it wasn't like me when I was taking flute lessons when I was a kid. I just hated it.
Well, Nana was also a long-time piano teacher. She did not, however, teach me to play piano. I had to take piano lessons from someone else because that's not the kind of thing you can learn from a family member very well. You have to go outside the home for those sorts of things. Things that require practice and dedication take somebody outside the home to crack the whip, I think.
Oh, I agree. My father, you've met my dad, David, before, went to school and was a concert pianist. And I did go outside the house to take piano lessons because you're right. You just can't learn that from a family member.
Right. Right. And I didn't. So that the knitting and crocheting and sewing were just totally fun things. So I did that without a great deal of skill for many, many years.
Well, you moved from the South to Virginia when you were still fairly young. I have to say that when I talk to you, I can hear still a bit of a Southern accent in your voice. Do you still have family there?
I do have family there, all my siblings, my mother's in Georgia, and I will say my friends from around the country don't usually comment on my Southern accent unless we happen to be in Atlanta. And when we're in Atlanta, apparently it only takes me about 10 minutes to just slide right into that Southern thing. So everybody laughs about me when I'm actually in Georgia.
You know, it happens. There are people that are kind of natural mimics about that stuff. I find that when I'm at Stitches South down in Atlanta, that by the end of the show, I've picked up a bit of a twang. I have a twin brother named Aaron who served most of his life in the military. And there's, you know, a lot of Southern boys in the military. And even though he grew up in the Midwest, he somehow has developed a Southern accent, having never been from the South.
I would love to hear that.
Well, it sounds, my brother's voice sounds very much like mine, maybe a little deeper, and again, with a Southern accent. So yeah, it's maybe one of these days I'll tape him and put him on just so people can hear the other twin. Well, but we won't talk about that right now. So you came into Virginia, you spent most of your life in Virginia, and so you got there. What was next in your life?
Well, I moved to Virginia when I got married. I was pretty young when I got married, and that's also when I sort of started getting serious about knitting. There was a great knitting shop here in this little town that I live in, and I learned lots of stuff from the women who owned the shop, and including this was, of course, in the days before the internet, before we had Ravelry. I remember one Sunday afternoon calling one of the shop owners and saying, "Help, I've done a yarn over on my knit row, and now I'm supposed to work into it on the purl row, and I don't know what to do." And she talked me down from my ledge and told me how to purl into the yarn over, and then I was good to go. So I had some great knitting support early on. And during that time, though, I was not doing this professionally. I was doing many other things that didn't have anything to do with knitting other than as a hobby.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. I've had so many guests on the show, and a common theme is that almost no one went to high school to learn knitting and then went into knitwear into college and then just came right out fully formed into the knitwear world. Can you tell our Fiber Hooligan audience a little bit about some of the things you've done besides being in the fiber world?
Sure. I have absolutely no formal art training, none at all. I was an econ major in college. I was a bank manager. I've been a real estate paralegal. I've been a business manager at a private estate. And I've been a lactation consultant. So those have all been various jobs, but mostly in the business world. And then, of course, at one point, I bought into that yarn shop that I loved so much. So I was a small business owner as well. It just happened to be in the yarn world.
But let's talk about your experience in the yarn store, because as you know from my story, we started out as a local yarn store called the Golden Fleece in downtown Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I grew up in that store. And for Fiber Hooligan listeners that don't know about this, it's a rough gig. There's a lot you need to know about business. There's a lot you need to know about all kinds of fiber arts. It is one of the most demanding jobs possible. And it's not what I would call a great high-paying job. Can you talk to us a little bit about your time? I've said it many times. Nobody gets into the fiber arts world to get rich. That's just not in the cards.
Well, they may expect to get rich, but it doesn't actually happen. So just as I say to people all the time, do not quit your day job. This is not a way to make money. Sure, I got into the yarn shop simply because I had been working, and I had when my daughter was born, I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. That lasted about 2.5 months, at which point I decided that I really wasn't cut out. I had always worked all my life, from the time, you know, in high school and so on, and I wasn't really doing very well just staying home with a baby. So at the same time, this local yarn shop that had four owners, one of the owners wanted to retire, and they told me they were going to close the shop. And that would have been the end of my sanity right there if I hadn't had a yarn shop to feed my habit. So instead of, we let that one person retire, and I bought her share. So then I was a co-owner of a yarn shop with a three-month-old baby. And the great thing about that was my daughter could come to work with me. So in the early months, I had a baby at the store with me, and I would wait on people and do all the things that you do as a small business owner with my baby right there. So I sort of had the best of both worlds. Having said that, being a yarn shop owner does not mean you get to sit around and knit all the time, which is, I think, everybody's fantasy and something that doesn't really happen. So there are all kinds of other things, but mostly it's not sitting around knitting or crocheting, unfortunately. It's retail, so you're selling stuff. And if you like retail, it's a fine place to be. But if you don't really like retail, which it turns out I didn't really like retail, it maybe wasn't the best place for me.
But it was still good training ground. I've had many people on the show that have managed or owned or worked in yarn stores before, and you learn a great deal. I had Patty Lyons on just recently on the show, and she was talking about her time and it was one of the best training grounds that she ever had, because so many people at so many different skill levels bring you so many problems with different techniques that you learn very quickly a lot of things.
Absolutely. It's problem solving. It's emotional support. It's technical support. And just when you think you have seen every mistake there is to be made, someone will walk in with something and you'll go, huh, I've never seen anybody do it that way before. So you have to figure out how to help them, how to troubleshoot. Maybe sometimes the problem is in the pattern, not with the customer, but you have to figure out how to do all that and make everybody happy and hopefully come out with a product that is going to fit somebody or look the way they expect it to, even though they didn't quite do what the pattern said. So it is trial by fire, certainly. And in terms of customizing patterns and really just learning all aspects of both the retail side, the consumer side, and the wholesale side, it is a great training ground. And I encourage people to work at yarn shops as long as if they want to be designers, just not to get rich, as you said.
Right. But again, there are some benefits to it. It's a quality of your life decision. The community is wonderful. Most fiber artists are pretty gracious, and it tends to be an environment where, like you say, you could bring your kid to work.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I was talking just this afternoon with a young woman who I am mentoring, and she was talking about how wonderful it is that people are willing to share their information. We may not share everything we know, but really it's a collegial atmosphere, and we like to help each other. And we do, there are some secrets. There are some trade secrets. We don't, as I say, tell everything we know, but it's really a great industry to be in, and certainly a happier place than some other industries you could be in that are more cutthroat.
Yes, absolutely. Again, the trade-off, folks. And maybe, if we can double or quadruple the number of knitters and crocheters in the world, there might be some money there eventually, but we'll work on that, won't we, Edie?
Absolutely.
So eventually, you moved from this aspect of working into the yarn shop to doing designing and teaching. Can you talk about that transition a little bit?
Sure. Well, after about 5 years in retail and another child, and my son came to work with me when he was 2 weeks old, so he's been working for a really long time. I decided I really didn't like retail, and my partners wanted to close the shop, and that was fine with me. It was just too much to do to be there all the time. But I really wanted to stay in the business. After all, I'd been buying yarn wholesale, and I didn't want to have to go back to buying yarn retail. So I just decided that I was going to be a designer. I had been helping people with designing custom fit sweaters and so on for years and problem solving, and I had looked at magazines and thought, I've designed better looking stuff than this. So the very first design that I sent off to a magazine was accepted, and that was a bit of a shock. It doesn't really happen that way. It just so happened to me that way, and I thought, this is easy. I can do this. So I was extremely lucky that I had success so soon, because obviously it's not like that all the time.
It isn't. Usually there's a drawer full of rejections or non-answers, an empty drawer of people that just don't get back to you. But you have done a lot of work. You've appeared as a designer, and you've also done technical editing for a lot of magazines: Creative Knitting, Crochet, Knitters Magazine, Interweave, Crochet, Creative Knitting, Knit and Style. You've been in a lot of publications at this point.
I have been, and I've worked for a lot of yarn companies, which probably too many to mention, just because there are a lot of yarn companies, and I've been around for a while, so I guess I've gotten around a little bit as well. So. Yes, and my own patterns as well. So I'm a little bit everywhere, I guess.
Nothing wrong with that. Now, at some point, you decided that you want to do some teaching, and I know that at the heart of your teaching was first the idea of being a student. And you got a great story to share about your first involvement with stitches.
Yes. Well, the very first stitches, I remember when the very first stitches was. It was October 11th, or maybe 10th on 11th, 1991. I missed that first stitches in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, because I was in labor. So I think that was a pretty good excuse. But
excuses.
I know. I was sort of disappointed to miss it. But I did attend the second stitches. It was in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, and the third and the fourth as a student, and maybe the fifth. I can't remember how many I went to. I took many, many classes from great teachers and was just thrilled that there were places to go and learn new things rather than just knitting books. And again, let me mention, this is before we all had the internet. So I was just thirsty for knowledge. But after some number, how many dozens of classes that I had taken, I decided it was time to teach. And XRX was nice enough to give me my first course. I'd been teaching locally for a while, but XRX was nice enough to give me my first national teaching gig at Stitches East now, but at the time I think it was still, there was the one Stitches.
Yeah, that's correct. For fiber hooligans that don't know the history, we're talking about 25 years ago. that Stitches got started in Cherry Hill, Stitches Expos, and the following year, and then for many years afterwards, there was only one show, and it was in King of Prussia outside of Philadelphia. And I have to say, I think it's wonderful that you kept coming to Stitches in King of Prussia, and that you, well, I always think it's amazing that everybody kept coming to that show, because that was a funky show. I mean, you have to admit, that was a strange, divey little place that we went to.
I think we should just mention, because many, many people don't know about that particular venue, but there were things called fantasy suites. And whatever you can imagine that might mean, I think your imagination could not do justice to what the reality was. And there were quite a few Stitches teachers and attendees who were, I guess, lucky enough to actually be able to stay in a fantasy suite.
Yes. I only went to that show, I think, three times before I left the company again when I was in my late 20s and early 30s. I saw one of the fantasy suites one time with the leather straps on the wall, and I walked right out immediately and thought, this is a strange place for a bunch of, 40 to 65-year-old women to come to. Very strange place.
And I'm not sure if you know, there was actually a group of nuns who who came to Stitches and got to stay in one of those fantasy suites.
I think that it's amazing that anybody stuck with us after those early days. We did, folks, we were young. We didn't know what we were doing. I was in college when this started. I mean, we've grown a bit since then. Now we have four shows, and we're kind of all over the place, and we're much bigger. But, thank you for sticking with us in those early days, because it was not optimal.
Well, it certainly makes a great story.
I guess. So you started a student, you became a teacher. Do you remember the first big show that you taught with us at?
I don't. I'm sorry. I wish I could. It was a Stitches, but I don't remember which
They
one.
All run together for me.
They do. Yes.
They do. But that wasn't the end of it. You branched out after that, and you started teaching at a lot of different places. The Knit and Crochet Show, the Midwest Fiber Folk Arts Fair, the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, otherwise known as Rhinebeck, the Fall Fiber Festival in Montpelier. You've done a lot of that other teaching, and you're well sought after for that.
I love to teach. It's one of my favorite things to do. I don't think I could teach third grade, but I love to teach either one-on-one or classes. It's kind of my people ask, somebody asked me today what I do for a hobby. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I like to teach, so it's something I really, really enjoy doing. It's kind of my mission, I've discovered, to make sure everybody understands how to read knitting and crochet patterns, whether I'm helping them figure it out or helping them with a technique or doing editing or technical editing or teaching people how to write patterns. I don't want people to be confused and frustrated when they're trying to follow a knitting or crochet pattern. So that's kind of my mission.
Well, and for a good long time, you taught in the consumer market, but I know that you have taught at TNNA, which is the National Needleworks Association, our wholesale show. And there you tend to teach a more business-oriented kind of class.
Right. I have taught a number of different things, and this is always fun for me. I love to go to TNNA because it's the business end of things. And as I said, I have a business background. So talking to the shop owners and teaching the shop owners and hearing from them and hearing what's going on their side of the industry is really compelling. I've taught technical writing for knitters and crocheters and technical editing, spreadsheet classes, how to use spreadsheets to help design, things like that that are beyond the scope of say, just a consumer, but more nuts and bolts business type classes. And I love to do that too.
Well, and our industry desperately needs that. There are a lot of great consumer classes out there, but there are a lot of people that are shops and wholesalers that need help as well. And so I'm glad that you're out there doing that kind of thing. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting about you is that I know that you started with knitting, but you really may have made your name out there in the crochet world. I'm going to read a line from your bio. She considers herself fully bi-textural and likes to serve as a knit crochet diplomat, easing the schism that exists between the two disciplines. Okay, so here we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of this real quickly.
Sure.
You and I have been around enough to see that that schism that exists between the knit and crochet worlds can get quite passionate and angsty at times, and yet I know you don't buy into that at all.
I absolutely refuse to become involved in it. I won't answer the question, which do you like better? It's like asking which of my children I like better. It depends on what I need. If I need IT help, I call on one. If I need fashion advice, I call on another. It's the same thing with knitting and crochet. They work well for different things. Sometimes they work equally well for certain things. But I don't think I should have to choose, and I don't think we should be. You can really like one or the other better, but come on, let's stop fighting about it.
Well, I agree, and I think that, you know, one of the things that I've seen, because you do a lot of crochet classes with us at Stitches, and I would think that you'd agree that the majority of your students are knitters who wish to become crocheters.
I think that's true. I think there's a little bit more of a culture of education in the knitting, on the knitting side of things, let's say, where knitters know they want to learn more about knitting. They know they don't know everything. They may not even know what they don't know, but they understand there's more to learn. Crocheters tend to be a little more independent. They probably learn from a family member and don't really realize there's a whole world out there to explore. Knitters have to be a little bit more structured, if you will, because when you have a needle full of stitches, you have to do something with every single one of those stitches, right? You have to knit into it or decrease it or bind it off or purl into it or something, because you have to work into every single stitch. So you have to be a little bit disciplined about it. In crochet, you only have one live stitch, and if your hook falls out, nothing's going to happen. So there's not maybe the pressure to perform with crochet the way there is with knitting. So I just like to let crocheters know that there's more to learn and try to bring that level of knowledge of crochet up to where crocheters are thirsty for learning more the way knitters have been.
Yeah, well, and I know that you, again, you've made your name very much so in the crochet world, but my guess is that you knit quite often as well.
I do. And as I say, somebody asked me today what I do in my spare time. I said, knit, maybe? I don't know. I knit. I've taken up weaving. So, but yeah, I knit as well as crochet. And I can't even tell you how much time I spend on each. It depends on what project I'm working on at the moment.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And again, for fiber hooligans that are listening that feel one way or the other, my advice is go and at least try everything. You might find you like it.
Right. And why not just put all the tools in your toolbox that you can have? I mean, I don't particularly like to hammer things, but every now and then I need a hammer. I'd rather use my electric drill or my screwdriver, but sometimes you need a nail. So learn to knit, learn to crochet, learn to weave, learn to sew. Whatever. Do it all. Learn a little bit about all of it and then make your choices.
I tell you, lately I've been looking around and it seems like weaving's really catching on.
I apparently so. So yay. One more way to use yarn.
One more way to use yarn. And folks, that's the point. When you do your stash acquisition that you should not feel guilty about it, you should have multiple ways in order to use that up so you can go buy some more, right?
Absolutely.
There we go. All right, so let's move on into your other work. Of course, you've been teaching for lots of different people. You've been with us for a good long time, and it's been wonderful to have you with us. But you're also an author, and I would like to talk about your bibliography. So can we go through your books together?
That would be great. And I love to talk about my books too, because I spend a lot of time writing them, and then I spend a lot of time talking about them and teaching from them and coming up with new ideas and thinking, oh, I wish I'd put that in the book. But it's something I learned about after I wrote the book, for instance. So The first crochet book I did, I have a number of, first of all, I should say, I have a number of pattern leaflets, booklets, and so on in knitting for many years. I did learn to knit socks, and apparently thousands of people have learned to knit socks from my Learn to Knit Socks book. And
Can I stop you really quick there?
Sure,
because
absolutely.
You have a great story about the design of your very first sock.
Yes. Okay.
And so I'm gonna let's parenthetically take you out of that, and I want you to talk about your very first sock design and how that all worked out, because it's a great story, folks. Forgive me for interrupting her, and she'll get back to books in a minute, but you got to hear this story.
That's fine. For years I wouldn't even admit to this story, so it's almost been a secret. Umpteen years ago, and I'm not being coy, I just can't even remember when it was, I had sent in a few designs to what was at the time American School of Needlework, they're now part of Annie's Publishing, but at the time they were in California. And Jean Linehauser was the editor, publisher there, and she is a famous name in the knitting and crochet world. She's passed away now, but everybody knew Jean. And I had sent these first, almost my very first designs to her, and she called me on the phone. Again, email wasn't done as much then. And she called me on the phone one Friday night. I was already in my pajamas. I was on the East Coast. She's on the West Coast. And she said, you know, these are nice designs, but I really think we need to do a sock book. Would you be willing to design some socks for us? And I said, well, I've never really designed socks before. I'm not sure that I can design socks, but I tell you what, it's Friday night. If I can come up with some ideas by Monday morning, yes, I'd love to do it. I'd be thrilled to do it because, of course, this is my first book, right? My booklet. I didn't want to tell her no. So I said, thank you very much, hung up the phone, and I looked at my husband. And he said, did I just hear you say you were going to do a sock book? And I said, yeah. And he said, have you ever made a sock? I said, no. I had made Christmas stockings, I'll say that. I had an idea of how to do it, but I went and got the colored pencils and the paper and sat down and thought, I don't know if I can design a sock. In about 30 minutes, I had sketched out 20 different sock ideas. So I thought, well, I guess I can do it. Now I just need to figure out how to actually make a sock. So I called Jean Monday morning and said, sure, I'll do that book. And do you know that book is still in print?
Well, and it sold a couple of copies, too.
It has sold a few copies, indeed.
Yeah.
So I was happy, and I guess I was good at writing how to learn to knit socks because I learned to knit socks so that I could write the book.
Well, I'm glad you shared that story with us. It's too good for us not to interrupt you. Okay, so let's get back to you, and thank you for sharing. Let's get back to your bibliography.
Okay. So there's Learn to Knit Socks and How to Knit Socks. I've done several sock booklets, but the books, the ones that people really want to talk about, started with the Crochet Answer book in 2005. And that was almost the same kind of thing where I thought, well, you know, people have questions about crochet. I have questions about crochet. I want to know all these answers to questions that I have, and I don't know what the answers are. And my friend Margaret Radcliffe was writing the Knitting Answer book at the same time, and Story Publishing asked me if I would do the Crochet Answer book. And so I went and researched answers to all the things I wondered about. I asked all my friends, so you crochet, so what do you want to know? And I came up with this list of questions. I don't know how many questions there are, and answered them. So I learned so much by writing that book, and I thought of it as kind of it's a way to have that friend next to you, the person you want to ask, like that yarn shop owner who you don't want to call on Sunday afternoon and say, how do you work a yarn over? Same thing with crochet. You want to have a knowledgeable friend nearby, but not annoy her all the time, so that's what the Crochet Answer book is about. It's like, you wonder, why are my edges messed up? Well, there's a question. How can I keep my edges even? So where do I put my hook? Well, there's an answer for that. So it's been pretty successful. There are 186,000 copies in print.
Wow.
That's
I mean, that's amazing. I mean
a lot of books.
well, not only that, it means that you have helped people be better crocheters. I mean, and we're not talking about insignificant numbers here. I mean, that's huge.
If they read it, of course. One of the things about the Crochet Answer book that I wrote in the introduction was I don't really expect people to read this book cover to cover. I expect you to dip in and find your question, get it answered, and I don't really expect anyone other than my mother to read it cover to cover. When the book came out, you know, obviously I sent a copy to my mother, and she said, oh, she called, oh, I'm so happy, I'm so proud of you, blah, blah, blah. I said, have you read it? She said, well, I looked at it. And I said, Mom, go read the introduction. So even my mother didn't read it cover to cover.
Well, but I understand the nature of that kind of a book. You know, we also have a reference book that we use a lot, and we put it out there kind of for everything that we do at XRX Books, called The Knitter's Handbook. And it's not a book necessarily that we think that anybody's going to read. It's a book that we want people to reference. It doesn't mean that we're not unbelievably proud of that book and that it has value, you know, beyond some. It's you're not going to curl up at the on the at the fireplace some night and read that kind of a book. You know, you're going to refer to it when you have questions, and that's a beautiful thing as far as I'm concerned.
The reference books are wonderful, and the reference books that are on my shelf are the ones that stay there, whereas the non-reference books eventually get retired.
No, I do understand that because they have longevity. And, you know, again, you've obviously done a good job of this. So, what was the next book you put out after that?
Well, the next book was Beyond the Square Crochet Motifs. So, crochet motifs like granny squares, but not
Right.
granny squares. So, well, there are other shapes, you know, there are hexagons, there are circles, there are triangles, there are pentagons, there are all other kinds of squares, and they're three-dimensional pieces. Like individual motifs are like tiny little projects, like yarn candy. You can use your scrap yarn and you can play with texture and color, and you're not making a huge time commitment or huge money commitment. But when you're through, you have a beautiful finished little piece of art, and you can either use it as an embellishment or just something pretty to look at, or you can put it together with other things. So I really love motifs. That book had 144 different motifs, but I actually did many more than that. But the publisher said we had to stop because apparently you can only have so many pages.
This was before the days of e-books when page count didn't
Exactly.
matter.
Right,
Yes.
right. Apparently they have to pay for pages and ink and stuff like that.
It's funny how the economics of publishing works and how it dampens the world of the artist. 'Cause
Right.
yes.
Well, I guess it just made it, you know, editorial is also a good thing, and maybe some of them didn't need to be in the book. So sometimes editing is a good thing. The other thing about that book that I tried to do was explain why pieces have to have a certain number of increases at a certain point to lie flat or to create this shape. So it really empowers the crocheter to know how to create their own flat motifs and do problem solving, and also improving the ends of rounds so that the crocheting itself just looks better, tidier. You know, just in it, finessing those details that maybe you didn't think about when you learned from how to crochet in brownies
Okay.
or Boy Scouts, I guess. I don't know if they.
Or Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
I don't know the Boy Scouts do that. They should. You know, again, you and I both know a very talented male crochet artist, so it's not like that's unprecedented.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what was your next book?
Well, the next book was Around the Corner Crochet Borders, which came about mostly because I was tired of trying to engineer corners on blankets and cardigans, where you're trying to do this beautiful design, and you know, when you're doing a cardigan and you want the edging to go all the way around, up around the neck and back down and around the bottom, and you have these 90-degree corners at the neck and at the lower edge, and you don't want to just sort of fudge it. You want the design to flow around it. but it has to, you have to have a certain number of increases to get those, that edging to lie flat. And there weren't any books that did this. All my edgings books went back and forth. And I, how many times did I make a baby blanket or a, an Afghan or something and had to figure out how to do it? So basically, I came up with 150 borders, small, medium, large, fancy, frilly, non-frilly, whatever. So now I have a reference book that I can use when I need a border to go on something and I want it to go around the corner. And luckily, other people thought that was a good idea too and bought the book.
Well, it's a great idea. So after that book, you did another Beyond Square Crochet Motifs. Is that the next book or is that the previous book?
Well, Connect the Shapes Crochet Motifs was sort of the follow-up to Beyond the Square because people had asked me, first of all, I didn't actually do any granny squares in Beyond the Square. So I thought, you know, we need to have a few granny squares in here too. But Connect the Shapes Crochet Motifs followed pretty naturally from Beyond the Square because in Beyond the Square, I showed individual motifs and I kept hearing from people, but what do you do with them? How do you put them together? So Connect the Shapes is about how to join the motifs. Of course, they're sewing, but why would you sew individual motifs together if you didn't have to? So I talk about join-as-you-go methods and seaming methods, crochet together methods, and ways to be more efficient at joining to avoid yarn tails, because really finishing is not anybody's favorite part about it. There's something called a continuous final join, which is, to me, I didn't make it up, but when I learned it, I was like, why doesn't everybody know this? We need to spread this information. One woman actually wrote me, she was mad at me, a little bit mad at me. She was upset. She said, why didn't you write this book 60 years ago? It could have saved me so much time. And she was a little peeved, and I, you know, I couldn't have written it 60 years ago because I wasn't born yet.
You know, I think that was darn inconsiderate of you not to be born earlier, Edie. I just want to go on record as saying that, you know, you could have done better by this woman.
Right, exactly. So that really made me laugh. But when the letter started out, dear Edie, I'm pretty angry at you. I was upset till I kept reading. then it was okay. So Connect the Shapes Crochet Motifs also has some finished projects. So it has new motifs, 101 designs that weren't in Beyond the Square, and some finished projects as well. So lots of hopefully creative ways to put things together and be pretty useful to people. And I got to use some of those motifs that I hadn't been able to use in the first book.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, I know that you did a project with Judith Durant. Can you talk about that project at all?
Yes, the Crochet One Skein Wonders. I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with Story Publishing's One Skein series, the One Skein Wonders books, which have been really popular. They're all, every one of the projects is done with one skein of yarn, and there are 101 projects in each book. So what a deal to get a book that has 101 projects and you only have to use one skein of yarn. The book that I worked on with Judith is the crochet. It's all crochet. So some of the previous books had had some crochet, but there was a real outcry for, okay, come on, we need a crochet book. So it was a lot of fun to work with, and I can't tell you how much fun it was to go to the editorial. When we were choosing the designs, people had sent in their designs and we had piles, we had boxes of designs to look at, and how much fun it is to just go through boxes and boxes of inspirational crochet and see the really cool things people do. It was so much fun, and it's been a very popular book.
Well, yes, it has been a popular book, and I think that and we've seen this in the marketplace a lot. One skein projects are unbelievably popular for obvious reasons.
Everybody has a skein of yarn or two or 27 sitting around waiting to become something.
Not and you, of course. You have no stash at all, I know.
None at all. Remember, I owned a yarn shop, and I still have some of the stuff we didn't sell. When, you know, it was too good to just give away. So I still
have. I've seen you at Stitches. I've seen you, you know, do a little retail therapy. I'm just saying, folks. I'm thinking on her.
I have both vintage and new yarn. Yes, because it's important to keep a balance of your stash.
Of course, and you're just making your stash feel more even. It's not for you; it's for your stash.
It is, and you never know when you're just going to have that particular, neon glow-in-the-dark yarn, because that comes up pretty frequently, I think, from crocheters.
Of course it does, and, you know, anybody that has a problem with that, you know, can email me at benjamin@barbarahooligan.com, and I will disagree with you and, you know, send chuckles at your way as well. So, no, I think it's, I think it's interesting that that you're not just a designer, you know, you're also one of the addicts in the world. I mean, you love this stuff. You love the fiber.
I totally live with it. Yes, absolutely. I'm not quite sure where the line, you know, the show Hoarders comes out on, I don't know what network it's on, but everybody's familiar with Hoarders. I'm not really sure where the line is between a hoarder and a collector. And I'm not sure I really want to know, because I'm afraid I've crossed it.
Don't need to be afraid. It's okay.
This is not really even a joke, I think. I think I'm serious. I'm not quite sure. we're laughing, but inside, I'm just wondering.
I think that people need to feel okay about their stash. I really do. And one of these days, I'm going to publish I have this great story that I do that I'm going to publish into an article about how to feel about it, and then how to hide it from other people so that you can more easily reconcile it with the spouse or whoever else in the world. So I'm going to work on that as just a public service article in the future. But I think it's good, because I know the cool thing about it is you get excited about the fiber just like your students do.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to see what they bought, and except then I'm kind of jealous because they got it and I didn't, right? So there is a little bit of envy going on there, but I'd rather have them spend their money than me spend mine sometimes, as long as they let me pet it and smell it. You know, that's another part of it too. You have to smell the yarn.
Well, and I totally get that. And I think you and I talked about the idea of it. New books are a thing that I like to smell as well. Brand new books have a wonderful smell to them.
Yes. The ink and the paper and the, I don't know, the chemicals.
The varnish. The varnish, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Yes, and I've seen many people at a Stitches show, if it's a new book or if it's yarn, bring it up to their nose and smell it. And I thought, okay, you don't need to do that to knit from it or to read from it, but they all do it. I see it so many times.
Well, why not? It's one of our senses, and we're so involved. I mean, when we're crocheting or knitting, we're using our tactile sense. We're looking at things. We're listening to the yarn swish or the needles quack, or sometimes the yarn squeaks. So why wouldn't we want to smell it as well? And two, if it smells bad, you don't want to be working with it.
Well, every so often you get something that's really beautiful by a hand dyer that's set it in some kind of vinegar solution, and that's not always pleasant, but it still looks beautiful.
Right, and I've actually opened a box of yarn that had been recently dyed, and they had used something that made me break out. I had to actually pack it back up and send it back. It was a hand dyer. I had to pack it back and say, I'm sorry, whatever finish you're using, I can't work with it. Because,
right.
And chances are I'm not the only one who's going to break out in hives.
You're not. I've heard that many times. All right, let's move on, because one of the things I want to share with the Fiber Hooligans is your work with the Craft Yarn Council. And, of course, I'm talking about the Certified Instructors Program. Can you tell us about the program, what it does, and about your involvement in it?
Of course. The Craft Yarn Council, first, is an association of some of the big players, I guess you'd say, in the craft yarn world. So the big yarn companies and that you would recognize, and I can't possibly name them all. But so And a lot of people are familiar with the yarn standards that the Craft Yarn Council came up with a number of years ago, trying to help categorize yarn weights and somehow standardize the sizes of knitting needles and crochet hooks. So they've done a lot of great work. And one of their programs is called the Certified Instructors Program. That is a way for a teacher, a knitting teacher or crochet teacher, to kind of show that usually she, sometimes he, has the skills needed to teach beginning knitting and crochet. So just because you know how to knit or know how to crochet doesn't mean you can teach it. There's another skill set involved in being able to show and articulate what's going on. You can't just say, okay, you do the yarn this way, now you do this, now you do this, see, now you're knitting. You have to really be able to meet the students' needs, explain it to them in a way that will make sense. And the Certified Instructors Program helps you do that. It's a correspondence course. Usually there is an in-person component as well if you want to do that. But when a student signs up for the Certified Instructors Program, they are given a master teacher as a resource person, but also given a handbook and some assignments. So there's some swatches that you have to do, both, you know, there's a knitting program and a crochet program, and some reading and some just some stuff to learn about teaching. And once all that work is done, you send in those materials to the master teacher, who evaluates your work, and we have a telephone chat to sort of further evaluate what's going on. The master teachers aren't meanies. We're pretty nice, I think, all of us. We don't want anybody to be nervous, but it's a chance for the student to show what you know about knitting and share your enthusiasm, and then really be prepared to teach knitting at the local community college or the library or your local big box store. Michaels has a program that where they have a Discover Knitting class and a Discover Crochet class. So there are lots of opportunities to teach in the community. This just helps you get ready for that and gives you the tools you need to be more confident as a teacher.
Well, I think it's a great idea, you know, and of course, there are a great number of the teachers that we have that have gone through this, some haven't, but as a kind of an equalizer for people that aren't sure whether they're ready, this sounds like a great idea.
It really is. I have had all kinds of students, some students who want to be teachers, I should say, and some are absolutely, like, they're better teachers than I am, I can tell. Some of them actually have been teachers in the classroom and so on. But I've had obstetricians take the class, and you know, they just want to do this on the side. I've had, as I say, retired teachers. I've had retired soldier take the class, and you know, I imagine they bring really different things into the classroom. I would love to take some of the classes taught by some of the people I've talked to over the past year or two.
Well, it's a great program. I've had Mary Colucci from the Craft Yarn Council on the show before, and if you're interested in learning more about the Craft Yarn Council, you can look at one of my back podcast episodes. And I just think it's great that you're involved in this. How long have you been involved as a certified instructor?
I think about 2 years. I don't tend to keep a resume with dates on it, so I don't really know, but I would guess about 2 years. And of course, I've known Mary for years and years. She's a great person.
She really is, absolutely. All right, let's move on from that. One of the things we haven't talked about in relationship to you teaching is something that I'm kind of excited about, something that I think is great. I'm a big fan of this company, and that's Craftsy, your Craftsy classes. And I before we get into your classes themselves, I wanted to talk to you about your kind of experience with the Craftsy organization, the working with them and you know, getting the class materials together.
Right. Well, they are so much fun to work with, and they really make me feel like a movie star when I'm there. Danica, who's the makeup gal, I'm like, wow, how'd you make me look like that? But it's magic. I don't know how she did that, but she manages to paint my face and I look okay. So that's just kind of fun. It's like being a princess for a day, and then you get into the studio and they just tell you how great you're doing all the time. I know it can't all be true, but it's okay. I like hearing it anyway.
Well, they're an ambitious bunch over there, and you've done a couple classes for them right now. Can you tell us about the classes that you offer now on Craftsy?
The two current classes that I have with Craftsy are called How to Say It, Pattern Writing for Knitters, which is about the language of pattern writing. So it's not how to design a sweater, but it's how to communicate that design to your audience. So again, sort of back to my mission of making sure everybody understands knitting and crochet patterns. There's a certain skill set that's required to be able to effectively communicate how to knit a sweater. And that's what this class is about. And we go through in a number of lessons and talk about style sheets and pattern templates and wording choices and who is your audience. And it's a little bit like a college course, but I think you really get your money's worth out of it and your time's worth in terms of professionalism when you finish the class. And then the other class is called Joining Crochet Motifs, because obviously I love to talk about crochet motifs, and this is kind of the video version, shortened video version maybe, of Connect the Shapes crochet motifs, where I demonstrate many of the techniques from the book, and we make a blanket, an afghan, using all these many different crochet techniques. So those are the two current classes, and then there's another one that I can only tease you about and say there's going to be another one.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. We'll have you on again so you can talk about that in the future. So speaking of stuff that's coming up, I know you can talk a little bit about this. You've got two new books coming up on the horizon that I think it's very exciting. Can you talk to the Fiber Hooligan audience about your two new books coming up?
I can, and of course I'm thrilled to do so. In August 2014, so not quite yet, but I have a book coming out called Christmas Crochet. Everybody loves to crochet for Christmas. I mean, everybody who's a crocheter loves to crochet for Christmas. And whether you celebrate for secular reasons or religious reasons or whatever, pretty much decorating for Christmas is a thing, right? So Christmas Crochet has lots of Christmas stockings, but it also has ornaments and garlands and some darling angels and a Christmas tree skirt and just all sorts of things that are fun in not necessarily traditionally Christmas colors. We didn't do a whole lot of red and green. It's bright and modern and fresh. I have a few guest designers, Kristen Omdahl and Andy Graves, and Carol Ventura, who is a tapestry crochet expert, has a tapestry crochet stocking in there. So I did most of the designs, but not all of the designs, and I was happy to have a little help. So that is, it's really exciting. I have just looked at the final pages now, and they're here on my desk, and so I'm really excited that it's coming out in August. That's still plenty of time to make stuff before Christmas. Other thing I really like about this book is that it truly runs the gamut in terms of skills. There are projects in there that are easy enough for absolute novice crocheters to make. You can make these projects with your kids and learn to crochet at the same time. And then there are a few projects that are quite a bit harder and really would be a little bit challenging, so therefore more expert crocheters, and then everything in between. A lot of times you get projects that are sort of all really easy or all intermediate, but I really try to make something for everybody, and you know, they're masculine looking Christmas stockings too, so not everything is lace and and feathers and beads or whatever.
Well, that's good.
So that's the Christmas Crochet book, which comes out in August. And then another really exciting thing, but you're going to have to wait till January, is the second edition of the Crochet Answer Book. So all those questions that were really not answered in the first one. Hopefully, I've gotten around to in the second one, the second edition. I have learned so much since 2005 about crochet. So I've tried to add many of the things I've learned. Another thing I've done in this one, which I'm thrilled to be able to do, is that we have left-handed illustrations as well as right-handed illustrations.
That's great.
So in almost every instance, or certainly every instance that matters, left-handers don't have to use a mirror or scan it and flip it on their computer or whatever. The illustration is right there on the page, right next to the text. I tried to be pretty handedness neutral, if you will. And I have a good friend of mine, Gwen Bortner, is going to be looking at the left-handed illustrations to make sure I didn't mess anything up. So, Gwen, you're on the hook now. If there are any mistakes, they're on you.
You're on the hook, Gwen, and no pun intended.
Exactly, right.
Well, that's very exciting. And for people that are interested in your existing books, when your new books are going to come out, or your Craftsy classes, where can we send them?
Well, you can always find me online, edieckman.com, Ravelry, and so on. All of the books are available at your favorite bookseller. So whether that's online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or your local yarn shop and your local bookstore, I'm a big believer in supporting your local shop. So if you can buy from an independent seller, please do so. They're small businesses, and they need our money. So do that. But you can find me online or in your local shop as well.
Right. And before you get out there, Fiber Hooligans, make sure you run up to edieckman.com just to make sure you have the titles right, or link over to the Craftsy classes, or find out where she's teaching. You can see her schedule. Speaking of your schedule, where are you teaching in the next couple of months?
Well, summer is a little bit of a slow time, thank goodness. I'll be teaching at Stitches Midwest in August and Stitches East in November?
October.
Right, October. I'll be teaching at Montpelier Fiber Festival, the Fall Fiber Festival in Virginia at Montpelier in October as well. I think that's it coming up for now. But I imagine I'll be getting some additional gigs with the Christmas book coming out. So you can always check my website to see what, where I'll be. And I also have a place you can sign up for a newsletter. So as I'm coming to local stores, I will send out newsletters letting you know where I will be.
And Fiber Hooligans, I'm going to encourage you to get up there and sign up for that newsletter. Edie is fantastic. And if you get a chance to meet her and take a class from her live or one of her Craftsy classes, I'm going to encourage you to do so. So we're coming down to the end of our interview, Edie. Second to last question, are there any shout-outs that you'd like to make?
Absolutely. I always have to mention my husband, Bill, who is always been 100% supportive of whatever career path I happen to be on. I think I mentioned a few of those. And I'm just really incredibly lucky to have the kind of backup kind of husband who never says, are you sure that's really a job? Because it's not always clear that this fiber thing is a job, because it would seem to some people I'd be just sitting around knitting all day or crocheting all day. So shout out to Bill. Thanks for almost 30 years, and let's keep going.
There's nothing wrong with that. I truly understand what it takes for the spouses in this industry to kind of tolerate it, because we're on the road a lot. Where none of us are getting rich real quickly, and it does require a pretty good infrastructure behind you to get this done.
Right. Absolutely.
All right, final question. I warn all of my guests. I gave you fair warning. Hope you're ready for it. Do you have anything that you'd like to say to the Fiber Hooligans that are listening to you? Any final words?
Okay, final words sound so final. But yes, I was prepared. About learning new skills, just relax. A lot of times as adults, we feel competent in our daily lives. We're used to driving the car, cutting the grass or whatever, and we're not used to going outside our comfort zones. But whenever you're learning a new skill, it's okay to feel uncomfortable and unsure of what you're doing. So just relax. Think like a kid. Learn new skills without the pressure or fear of failure, because it's, I mean, look, it's not brain surgery. Nobody's going to get hurt if you make a knitting or crochet mistake, right? You're just going to rip it out. So just relax and breathe. You can do it.
That's great advice. It's very good advice for somebody to think about going outside their comfort zone. Well done. And so I wanted to thank you for being on the show today. I hope that we can convince you to come back and visit the Fiber Hooligans again.
Of course, anytime. Be happy to be here.
All right. Well, you have a great day, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Benjamin. See you soon.
See you at Midwest.
All right.
That was Edie Ekman. You can keep up with what Edie is doing at edieekman.com. You can take a look at her books, her schedule of workshops, and lots more about Edie. And I'm going to encourage you to get up there today, sign up for her newsletter, and that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Okay, you know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Rubber Group, and administrator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Tammy. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
You know, it's always a good day when I get to talk to you.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you.
It's not just kind. I am one of your biggest fans. You know that.
How's everything going with you?
It's going great. Thank you for asking. You know, things are, you know, starting to warm up here in South Dakota, which is a good thing. You know, we're kind of past all the weird rains that happened, and it's just starting to warm up, which after this winter, I really needed to warm up. I still feel like I have a faint chill left over from this winter. It was just so harsh.
I know that feeling. Are the kids out of school?
Oh, yeah. They've been out of school for weeks and weeks, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. It's good to have them around. You know, and now I've got both Christopher and Samantha in the house that are drivers, so that if I need to send somebody to a store to get something, I don't have to go myself.
There you go. That's a good plan.
That's a wonderful thing. So, you know, what did you think of Edie? She's pretty incredible, huh?
Yes. I am so looking forward to getting to meet her. I've been following her on Facebook since Stitches West, but I didn't get to meet her when I was there. So that's something I still have to look forward to.
Oh, no. You didn't get to meet Edie when you guys were both at Stitches West together?
There were so many people. There was 12,000 people that I hear the numbers are that came through the doors. So many people I got to meet, and I just didn't get to meet everybody.
You really didn't get to meet everybody? You didn't have a little checklist? And all that?
Yeah, some people I just ran over.
Yeah, she's pretty incredible. She's been with us since, she started taking classes with us at our second Stitches ever in King of Prussia. You know, it feels like I've known her forever. She's kind of an amazing lady, really smart too.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, very cool. So I always look forward to your report. What have you got for us this week, Tammy?
Well, today I was going to share about the Worldwide Knit in Public Day. And this can be found at their website, www.wwkipday.com. They've abbreviated it, so I'm hoping that that kind of translates to being able to find it. This will be taking place between the 14th and the 22nd of June, so this upcoming next two weekends. The reason for the two weekends is because in some locations there was were other events going on. And that kind of gives, I think, a little bit more flexibility to the different communities putting an event together, having the two weekends to choose from. This all got started in 2005. And by 2009, it had grown to 751 events And over the years, there have been local events in all kinds of places: Australia, China, England, Finland, France, Ireland, Norway, South Africa, Sweden, United States, and so many other places. In the past, some people have used this event as a means to show the general public that it's not only the Grammys that knit. So while that's great and all, having a lot of older ladies knit, keep in mind that without those Grammys, we wouldn't have the wealth of knitting knowledge that we do. So the Worldwide Knit in Public Day is really about showing the general public that knitting can be a community activity in a very distinct way. In some places, there are many different knitting groups that never interact with each other. So on this day, they can all come together in one place, and that kind of makes them hard to miss. The gathering gives us an opportunity to learn things. So like in my situation personally, I learned so much from listening to you, Benjamin, as a publisher and organizer of the Stitches events and all things fiber. I'm also working as a social media helper to designers, and I'm learning so much from them. Because I've been knitting for decades, I've not been formally designing. So in my own community, it would be smart for me to spend time with others that I could learn from in person. And that I'm given that opportunity with the Worldwide Knit in Public Day. So in my local yarn store, that's organizing things, I appreciate You and Brew. It's a brand new store in the Boise area, and its owner, Britt Bordeaux, who's been knitting for less than 3 years before she opened up her own shop. But she realized that in our area, there was a market for a yarn store where there had only been 3 yarn stores. And she sought the wisdom of other yarn store owners and even of shops that had closed, and put that information to work to open her own shop. In addition, you may remember our wonderful Fiber Hooligan stitch markers that we sent out to the participants of this Chelsea Shawl Knit Along. And some were able to pick them up at the Stitches events. They came from my neighbor, basically, Knit Girl in Idaho, and its owner, Renee Labard. I first found her because her personalized stitch markers appeared in the Jane Austen Knits magazine. And since then, she's been extremely busy creating stitch markers for shops and events everywhere. And another that I've learned so much from is Heidi Hennessy of Pepperberry Knits. Here locally, Heidi did a smashing business this year at TNNA. I understand you got to meet her, Benjamin.
I did. I tell you, they were on fire.
Yeah. She has this wonderful 100% cashmere yarn. At TNNA, she put together packages of mini skeins into kits to create cowls. And the local yarn store owners that attended TNNA loved. They were so tickled that she has jokingly dubbed her workspace as the Mongolian sweatshop. And she's cracked the whip on her team to deliver to the shops all over the country. So I'm looking forward to this event, getting to spend some casual time with these ladies, showing others in my community what knitting and crocheting and spinning means to us and our families and our neighbors.
Well, I think this is really great. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that you have so much local talent there because, of course, you know, I'm a big fan of the stitch markers that Rennie made for us. Beautiful, beautiful. In fact, I think I was up on the knittinguniverse.com store and realized we were out of it, so we probably need to reorder those pretty soon. And, you know, your local yarn store, of course, really great story there. And Pepperberry Knits, I have to tell you, I'm just enamored with them. I really am.
Yeah, she said you spent a bit of time on their cashmere couch. So,
it's just really. Have you seen it? Have you seen their stuff? I mean, it's pretty luxurious, you know.
Yes, 100% cashmere is pretty rare to find.
We should contact her and see if she wants to come on the show.
I think that's a great idea. I'll give her a call.
All right, let's get her on the horn and see if she doesn't want to be a guest. You, Fiber Hooligans, you want to hear from somebody that's dealing with cashmere, and she's wonderful. She's got this bright, vibrant red hair, and she's fun. It'll be a great interview.
And a great, bubbly personality, which we all need more of.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. Yeah, no, she's come on to the scene strong, hasn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that kind of enthusiasm and energy. You know, it's so easy, folks, you're in it forever, and, you know, sometimes it can become routine, and it's wonderful to have enthusiasm and just a different take on things to shake everything up and make it really exciting again. I mean, that's what I get from you, Tammy. You always give me such kind of positive enthusiasm and reinforcement. I get all jazzed up whenever I talk to you.
Ah, all three of these ladies are so smart. So, like I said, I'm really looking forward to not being in the shop, but out in an open public atmosphere and getting to share with others that normally wouldn't walk into a yarn store, about how wonderful, getting to be together and knit together, it really is. So I'm really looking forward to our event.
Well, and I think it's a good idea. The thing that our industry can do that I think that a lot of industries can't do is we can create a community that is actually worth something, something that is positive, that reinforces each other, that is not bound by business agendas. And it's something that I think I find very exciting about our industry.
Yes, it's awesome.
It is awesome. Okay, well, again, what can I say? You always astound me with what you bring to the show. Thank you for another great segment, Tammy, and we'll look forward to hearing from you next Monday.
Yay! Happy Monday!
Happy Monday. That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and admin of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you might have heard on the show. Next week, my guest will be the very funny and enthusiastic Nicole Snow. Born in central New Jersey, where she grew up in a log cabin and spent hours playing craft corner with an old-fashioned cash register and her parents' office supplies, Nicole Snow is the founder and CEO of Darn Good Yarn, the world's greatest online recycled silk yarn company. Nicole had known since the seventh grade that she wanted to serve as an officer in the United States Air Force. She started taking flying lessons when she was 13, dreaming of flying KC-10s. She attended college on a full United States Air Force scholarship at Clarkson University in upstate New York, where she played on the tennis team and was a resident advisor. She also met Mike, a fellow resident advisor who became the love of her life and now husband while she was at Clarkson. Nicole received a Bachelor of Science in Business and Technology Management with honors, with a concentration in international business in 2004. She served 2 years of active duty service as a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force before launching Round the Ohm, a general imports from around the globe company, in 2006. Mike's career as a civil engineer has taken Nicole to California, Alaska, Utah, Maine, New Hampshire, and New York. Wanting to create a business that she could take anywhere with her and fulfill her goal of creating social consciousness through crafting a design, Darn Good Yarn was founded. Since 2008, Darn Good Yarn has saved over 25,000 pounds of material from ending up in landfills, recycling it, and employing over 300 women in India and Nepal who create Darn Good Yarn's hand-spun, hand-dyed silk yarn and craft supplies. Nicole is a member of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Small Business Policy Committee, and in 2013, she was the $25,000 grand prize winner of FedEx's inaugural Small Business Grant Contest. She has worked closely with Maine's Governor Paul LePage since 2013 to grow microbusinesses in the state and has passionately shared her microbusiness expertise as a consultant. Nicole and the Darn Good Yarn gang are currently moving, bringing Darn Good Yarn operations to Schenectady, New York, where Darn Good Yarn will open their first retail location in the historic downtown business center this month. But she'll be taking a break from her unpacking and renovating to talk to us about her story and the amazing business that is Darn Good Yarn. I've had a chance to talk with Nicole, and she's not only an amazing entrepreneur, she's a real kick. I hope you'll tune in next week so you can hear from this dynamic woman firsthand. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and AllFreeCrochet.com for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stewart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank my guest, Edie Ekman, for being so gracious with her time and being so wonderful on today's show. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. I'd like to thank Bijou Basin Ranch for sponsoring today's show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week for another edition of Fiber Hooligan.